Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell.
It's Liza with a Z, not Lisa with an S, cause Lisa with an S goes snods.
Let me hear you say, hey, Miss Carter.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Snap out of it.
Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade?
There can be 100 people in the room.
Liza!
I'm Robbie Latour.
And I'm Tequila Mockingbird.
Welcome to Divas on Divas,
the podcast where we make our diva obsession your problem.
Aw, Tequila, what an honour and a privilege it is to be podcasting with you again.
My goodness, we've gotten so much done, haven't we, Robert?
What?
No?
No, I love the positivity. I just have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, we now are on our second record back.
I know.
After lockdown.
I know. And can I say socialising with you is exhausting.
Couldn't be more exhausted just leaving the house in general.
But it's not just us here today, Tequila Mockingbird. It is a very exciting episode. We have got a guest with us in the studio yet again. Most people will be able to pick our guest by the fact that we have changed our sponsored alcohol today.
Yes, today we are sponsored by Ruskies.
Well, premium TM, Ruskies. TM. We are, of course, talking about the one and only Missy Lemix. Thank you, Missy, for joining us. How are you?
Hello, dickheads. How are we? Lockdown lovers. Here we go.
There's that catchphrase. Now, last time I broadcasted with you, it was on the radio on Joy FM where I do some work, and you weren't allowed to say that, so that must have felt good.
Was I not? I think I did drop it anyway.
I think I did drop it anyway
because, you know, they've got to know who they're talking about and talking to.
You see, how nice is it to be out of the house? I'm sure you're very excited to be spending time with us again.
It is absolutely lovely. I had nowhere else to be, so I couldn't have had any other excuse not to arrive, but I thank you very much for having me. I actually thought I had already recorded the podcast. I thought we'd already done it.
This is good. We did record a little piece over the phone for our promo piece where we called all of our guest divas for the season. You can catch that episode earlier on in the seasons where you're getting your podcast from, but it was about a 2-minute record that we did with you over the phone, and you were pretty chuffed with that.
Yeah, Tequila sent me a message, would you mind doing this for us, sis? And I thought, oh, help a sister out, you know what it's like. I had nothing else on, and picked up the phone, did my little interview, a couple of minutes there, we had a nice little camp banter, and I thought, done and dusted. A couple of months went by, Tequila gets in touch with me and says, girl, we should get you in for that podcast recording post-lockdown. And I said, girl, I'm sure I've already done it. Turns out I had just done the promotional material, and now I am stuck here for at least an hour. But thrilled to be here. Thanks for asking.
And what a shame, because you did burn all your good material on the podcast promo.
I'm just devastated that we're not having a Pink or Kelly Clarkson episode.
Not this season, but we might get you back in for one, season two or season... Well, actually, with those acts, probably season 10, I reckon. Yeah. Oh, we're really scraping the barrel.
I do decline, but thank you anyway. If there's a Dua Lipa one coming out, I could be interested as well. Well, that's nice. Let's get physical.
The diva that we are covering today, you're lucky to be here because it's one of Tequila Mockingbird's all-time favourites.
Yeah, I genuinely think... I would always say that Liza is my favourite diva, but I think Gaga's probably a very close second, if not very close to being the first of my favourite divas. I think she's absolutely incredible. We are, of course, talking about the one and only Lady Gaga.
Oh, poo, I thought I was here for the Barney the Dinosaur episode.
Is that why you wore that purple outfit? Yeah.
You can take it off now.
No, like, I've just finished my shift as Grimace outside McDonald's on the Nepean Highway.
Yeah, lockdown has been kind to us, hasn't it?
Lady Gaga, how fabulous is she?
Oh. And we've got so much to dive into. So, should we take it away?
Where do I begin?
She was born Stephanie Joanne Angelina Germanotta on March 28, 1986 in Manhattan, New York City.
She was brought up in the affluent Upper West Side by upper middle class parents, Tequila. I find this very interesting because we often talk about rags to riches. I didn't know this about Gaga, but it's really riches to riches with her.
Yeah, she started out already quite well off despite her protestations otherwise, really.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she's had her own share of struggles as we all have, but not from some of the poorer communities that we hear from a lot of our divas. Her mum was a philanthropist and business executive. Her father was an internet entrepreneur, which are those kind of vague titles that rich people have.
Yeah, hedge fund people.
What's a philanthropist? Hang on, let me go again. What's a philanthropist? I'm gonna give up.
This is great.
What's a philanthropist, you are?
Philanthropist.
It's a very good question. I'm very glad you asked that. It's someone who
cares for flowers.
Sits on a lot of like boards and a lot of charities and does a lot of charitable work.
I've sat on a lot of boards in my life. Oh no, that's broad, sorry.
She started learning the piano at age 4 and her lessons taught her to create music by ear, which she's always preferred over reading sheet music.
She was encouraged towards music by her parents, who enrolled her in creative arts camp and went on to play many open mic nights.
After high school, she continued her studies into the arts, focusing on improving her songwriting skills by writing essays on art, religion, social issues and politics.
By 2005, she had quit all formal study to pursue a career in the music industry.
By 2006, she took on the name Lady Gaga and was performing her brand of pop burlesque performance art in downtown New York club.
She got her inroads working for record labels as a songwriter and eventually got an opportunity to write her release debut album Fame in 2008.
And in 2009, although already making a huge name for herself, she was booked as the opening act for the Pussycat Dolls World Tour in Europe and Oceania, which is the very first time I ever saw her live.
Oh, so you went to the Pussycat
Dolls? So I went to the Pussycat Dolls.
OG, OG.
Without even knowing what a Lady Gaga was.
Yeah,
and then
right.
She came out with that short blonde bob and those glasses and that big spiky costumes and her disco stick, and everyone was like, what is this? This is so exciting.
Yeah. How magical. How old were you then when Lady Gaga came out?
14.
It was about 19.
Oh my gosh. I was 17, little kid. Oh, I remember her very well. That's what made me realize I was gay.
God, I'm older than both of you, aren't I? Yeah. I was out in clubs already when that happened. But I remember everybody talked about that Pussycat Dolls concert, but nobody talked about the Pussycat Dolls. Everybody was talking about
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga, this opening act.
People left after Lady Gaga had been on.
I wish I had.
You didn't want to grow up. I want to be famous. I want to be a star. I want to be in movies.
Boobies. Once again, listeners, I was just simulating breasts on myself. For the first time this podcast.
I love it when you simulate breasts. Lady Gaga eventually returns to our shores with her own tour, The Monster Ball, which was the first time I got to see her live.
That was the most incredible show. I still love it. You can download it off YouTube videos, and it is amazing. I watched it a couple of weeks ago in preparation for this exact podcast.
Because they did indeed film it when she was performing at Madison Square Gardens. They filmed it live, and they do a whole bunch of backstage stuff with her as well.
I just remember her working her butt off.
Absolutely.
Like, she was going at 100 for, 2 hours plus. It was just phenomenal.
I think this is something that we're going to dive into further throughout the podcast as we go along today, but everything she does, she gives 100 all the time. And every performance I've ever seen, she's always got the live vocals and the full dancing and the full like production value and everything. And it really is a testament to how incredible an artist she is in such a short space of time that she's been around since 2009.
The level of detail is really what sets her apart from the other generic pop divas that have been manufactured in a studio somewhere. She is the real deal live talent. Live, one of my absolute favourites.
She has starred in 3 theatrical releases, which I wasn't entirely sure of, and a smattering of television as well.
I was pretty surprised by the 3 as well. Star is Born, but also Sin City 2.
Oh, of course, yeah.
A Dame to Kill For and Machete Kills.
Oh, Machete Kills.
Oh, I love Machete Kills. No,
she looks beautiful in that. That was around the telephone era as well. Great.
Never seen it.
Or heard of it.
Her most notable things that she starred in, of course, were American Horror Story, both Hotel and Roanoke. She was the very first guest judge on the season 9 premiere of RuPaul's Drag Race. And she was also the star of A Star Is Born.
That's another one of our divas that is associated with A Star Is Born. They are stacking up.
Yeah, I believe it's probably the last one that we're going to cover now that it has some kind of tangible link to A Star Is Born. Oh God, what are we at? We're like 6 divas now or something that have something to do with it. It's so many 6 degrees of separation with this movie and this project.
So is this podcast really just all about A Star Is Born and you've just tried to title it off as Divas on Divas?
Pretty much.
I'm on to you, feral bitches.
The only things we care about is Star Is Born and Hollywood Walk of Fame. So the rest is just built around that. Some of her biggest hits are, of course, Poker Face, Bad Romance, Telephone with last week's diva Beyoncé, and Rain On Me.
I think you've really missed one there.
Missed a few. But
Venus from Art Pop. you laugh in my face to kill a mockingbird. Blast off to the planet. penis. That is such a great song. And there's honestly, if you're ever going to pop a tab of acid, this is what you need to do, ladies, is pop Venus featuring the Muppets on. Because Lady Gaga dances with the Muppets in a version of Venus, and it is hysterical.
But what? Also just another thing that she starred in on television when she did that Muppets special. I believe RuPaul was also in that.
We'll pop that clip of Venus up on the website. That sounds like something that would definitely be worth a watch.
Sadly, she has never been married.
Oh. Isn't that sad?
Poor Gaga, very unlucky in love.
I did find it interesting when I was noting that, you know, she hasn't had any marriages. She has been engaged a couple of times, but yeah, no marriages or children to speak of. I did find it interesting that we even incorporate that. I think a lot of the older divas, the stalwarts of the diva community, it's something really interesting about them. But then when you look at the younger divas and the newer divas, it seemed kind of funny to define them by who they've been married to, yeah, or who they've had, what kids they've had. I think we'll continue doing it, but it was an interesting thing.
She has one Academy Award win from 3 nominations. She has 2 Golden Globes from 4 nominations, 3 Emmy nominations, including one for her iconic Super Bowl performance.
So good.
Oh.
Bookmark this.
Oh, yes, please. Mm. 11 Grammys from 27 nominations and 18 MTV Video Music Awards from 37 nominations.
That is a lot of nominations. 37 nominations for MTV and 27 for Grammys.
Yeah.
The odds aren't great, but still.
Look, 18 wins from 37 isn't bad. That's almost a 50-50 hit rate. Now, she does not currently have a Hollywood Walk of Fame star, but...
We're always coming back to the Hollywood Walk of Fame star.
We love nothing more than it. It's one of our favourite things.
I'm so obsessed with it. But the internet did go into a little bit of a meltdown back in October of last year when she shared a photo on her Instagram, and in the background there was a framed plaque with a picture of a Hollywood Walk of Fame star. So everyone was going, oh, it must be coming. She's getting hers, or this must be something that they give people when they're about to give one. But of course, they've named all the recipients of Hollywood Walk of Fame for last year and this year, and she's not on it. So.
Still hasn't made the list.
No.
Might be somebody else's. She might be a big fan of...
I think someone might have sent it to her or something. You know, it could be anything.
Really. Cat little joke. Look what you don't have.
But you know how people love to just...
I'm going to send a picture of my Melbourne Drag Award to you when I get home.
Oh, God. How long... Note the time. How long are we into it?
Probably only 2 minutes by the time I edit all the crap out.
No, it's better when we don't have a guest, actually.
I'm more than happy to leave.
Have it noted that we have already brought up the fact that Missy Lemminx is, of course, a Melbourne Drag Award recipient for Bitch of the Year. Well, you did miss out last year, unfortunately.
I'm sorry, I should have introduced you correctly.
I was about to say, I did send through my brief. We got the one about we must have Ruskies and only red M&Ms, but we didn't have my bio to introduce me in.
No, I do apologise for that, but thank you for correcting it.
Always, happy to.
Well, now that all of those shenanigans are over and done with, let's move on to a little segment we like to call...
And isn't it iconic? Don't you think?
Holy shit, you have spared no great expense there. Wow! Holy dolly!
That is the correct response, thank you.
Whoa!
The dulcet tones of your two diva hosts.
Okay, so as you can well imagine, I have so much that I want to talk about on this episode.
Yeah, how many pages did you originally have and how many have you brought here today?
Originally I had 12 and then I cut it down to about 7 and then for today I cut it down to 5.
Right. That sounds like her Grammy nominations versus wins. The way you've had to whittle those down.
So there's so much that I want to cover. Obviously, there's no way with the time that we've got that I'd be able to cover every single thing, because I believe that every single thing that she's done deserves a notable mention.
You're too busy. You haven't got the time.
I haven't got the time.
Missy, what have you got on for the rest of the day? We could just stay here and talk about literally everything Gaga's ever done.
Look, sadly, nothing else to do. Nothing else.
Great, right, let's do it. How many Ruskies? 12 pages.
How many Ruskies have we got?
One slab.
Funny you should say that, because I have saved the 12-page version, so let me just open that up.
I was using humour.
I would like to start this little segment with one of my favourite performances of hers of all time, which is one of the first times I ever really was blown away by a live TV performance. I've never seen anything like it, and it was straight out the gate at the very start of her career in, like, early 2009 at the VMAs, and it was her paparazzi performance.
Absolutely incredible, wasn't it?
At this point in Gaga's career, we'd already gotten used to, like, the wacky avant-garde crazy outfits and her lavish music videos, but seeing this performance live was honestly a real turning point for me. She performed her single Paparazzi and sent a warning to everyone in the audience and those watching at home. By the end of the number, she's lifted off the stage and fake blood starts oozing out of her, like out of her chest. And she's got the paparazzi camera lights flashing on her. She said it was a reflection on how poorly she was being treated by the paparazzi and how she was hounded by them in the like the very start of her career. And she also referenced it back to how Britney Spears was also, because it was 2 years after Britney's meltdown when she was hitting the paparazzi with the umbrellas and the shaving of the head and that whole meltdown thing there. And it was a reference to that. And also like how the paparazzi have a history of treating these celebrities and always chasing them down. I mean, it was the death of Princess Diana was due to her being chased through that tunnel in Paris by the paparazzi and things like that. And it was a real political statement, like at that time, to say, leave me the fuck alone, basically. Mm. Or like, get off my back, and I'm just a person just like anyone else. And it's stunning. If you haven't seen it, we'll play a little clip of it now. I don't know about you, but every time I see that, that gives me full body chills.
She's hanging there from the ceiling, held by up by her arm, just dripping in absolute blood as the camera flashes go. That to me is just absolute clear art.
Yeah.
Proving and pushing an absolute message, which is really what she's actually all about.
Yeah, it's a really powerful piece. And it was sort of really early on in her career where people were just kind of getting used to the fact that, you know, there was this performance art element to what Gaga does. And there was this really powerful message behind a lot of what she was doing. She talks a lot about that. And she mentions people, like you were saying, Marilyn Monroe, Anna Nicole Smith, she mentioned. I think she's really clever and really switched on in the effect that getting famous can have on some people. And the way that it causes other people to treat you.
100%. And I definitely think that was her whole message behind those two first albums as well, about the fame and the fame monster. Looking at sort of both sides of the coin, how she was this up-and-coming star, and then also how fame can change people and how other people's perception of you is changed significantly and how you're treated has changed significantly by becoming famous.
So I had a couple of iconic moments down here on my little list. Of course, we're never going to ever move beyond the meat dress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The meat dress movement was absolutely insane. Like, to turn up wearing actual flesh, to me, is still terrifying and creepy, but so empowering. And as she's always done, is pushing her absolute message. The most unusual message that I was looking through in my research for her was the Bad Romance film clip. Do you remember the Bad Romance film clip where they're in the psych ward?
Where she's in the bath.
Literally, and she's got all that white on. She had that big pointy hat on, and it's all very, you know, jarring movement. But you cut to halfway through the film clip, and she's actually being sold as a sex slave.
Oh, all the big issues here on Divas on Netflix.
Yeah, no, but really, that is one of her messages that she's put into a song. Mm. And, you know, 10 years ago when that song came out and I was young, I didn't recognise that that's what that was. And then later on, you sit there and go back through it and you watch them and you're like, this was beyond where we were at when we got this material.
Yeah.
100%. It's way beyond the scope of the time that we were at and sort of pushing those boundaries so early on in her career. Mm. Incredible.
She's always said, and it's a very consistent through line with her, she's always said that the things that she's passionate about and the messages that she wants to speak, she's going to speak them.
And she always does. And that's what actually is the best thing about her. She doesn't care of the ramifications or any of the online trolling and the hating and the bullying about it all. She's got a message and she'll deliver her message in an artistic art piece. And if you don't like it, fuck off.
Yeah, totally. I think the moment for me that really put Gaga on the map was the Telephone film clip, which is a lovely little diva crossover for us from Beyonce from last week. It was my first sort of exposure where film clips weren't just the song.
They weren't just the song. They were a mini movie piece, weren't they?
Yeah,
exactly.
It's 10 minutes long. long. Yep. Like, it's almost 10 minutes long, the original telephone clip. And it's got so many of her iconic looks in it. It's got the caution tape outfit. It's got the cigarette glasses. It's got the telephone wig piece that sits over her eye. Like, it's really, really stunning. It was sort of my first exposure to when a massive star would collaborate with another massive star.
It was one of the ones from our generation that you would really remember, two artists coming together and just tackling a project, because I don't remember it being like that.
I don't remember a lot of that before then either. And I remember thinking at the time, why does this make financial sense? Either of them could do their own thing and make a lot of money. But obviously, if they come together, they figure that they make even more money, or they just really want to work together.
Yeah, I would never work with anyone in my life. I think it's foolish. Do you know her younger sister, a fashion student, was actually in the film clip for Telephone?
I did read that, and then I watched the clip and I couldn't pick who she was.
You can't? Yeah, she's the girl in the prison at the very beginning. She's the girl she's like hanging on the bars when they're in the prison. They cut to her quite a few times. She is the spitting double of Lady Gaga, yeah, but right. She has dark hair.
I'm just so thrilled it's not the one she's pashing.
That would have been awkward.
Leave that bit in.
How great was that? There was a full-on girl-on-girl kiss. There was a full-on prison yard fight scene. Like, it was all just very...
In the background next to her sister was also a lady wearing a Bunnings uniform. Like, it had it all.
This is one of my favourite bits from the film clip, when Beyoncé arrives and Gaga jumps into the pussy
wagon.
She's
been a very bad girl, hasn't she?
You've been a very bad girl. A very, very bad, bad girl, Gaga.
Inexplicably eating pastry. Now feeding pastry to Lady Gaga.
That's stiffy.
Honeybee. Sure you want to do this, honeybee?
What do you mean, am I sure?
You know what they say. Once you kill a cow, you gotta make a burger.
They do always say that.
It's actually something my mum taught me. Her mum taught her. Like, it's generational, that is.
Nothing had to really make sense. Although there is a really good through line, storyline through this piece, which I love. And it has that moment where we all went, at the end, when they said, to be continued.
And then they continued it with video phone.
But quite some time later,
that
right?
That wasn't a really continuation, though, was it?
Yeah, I think it was a cop-out.
Do we think we'll ever get the actual second coming of this?
God, I hope so.
I think Beyoncé's just too rich now. I don't think Beyoncé's going to... Like, this was like 2009, I'm going to guess, doesn't it? When she just released Single Ladies. Like, Beyoncé had only really, in my opinion, just made it in this song here.
Oh, wow.
She was only at the peak of her
fame. Remember feeling like that too. It was really when Beyoncé was really starting to blow up.
She was really just taking off. And then Lady Gaga kind of attached herself onto that.
I think now we're going to get that. Just sort of got bigger and just went, I'm not going to go back to that. It could also have something to do with this little quote from Lady Gaga.
That was the night that I gave Beyonce like a panic attack.
How'd you give her a panic attack?
I don't know. I just always feel like when I'm with her and Jay-Z, I'm always like hanging out in the corner with like 9 joints hanging out of my mouth, huh? Being like, what's up? And she's just like, close. You're not a lady, but why? How is this working?
How is this working? You're not a lady.
She's not a lady. That actually brings us back to the start of her career when people didn't think she was a lady. Remember that? we forgot to mention this.
No, we've got plenty on that coming later. Wow. It's actually birthed my favourite ever moment of Gaga, but we will...
Is it to do with a Hollywood Walk of Fame, the movie A Star Is Born, or Will and Grace?
No, actually.
Wow.
Would you believe it?
New fresh material on Divas on Divas. Shit, son.
Talking back to our conversation we had a little earlier about the Monster Ball tour, it was her first huge tour that she did worldwide, internationally, and it was so much fun. I saw it a couple of times in Europe and I saw it a couple of times in the UK.
Ooh, traveller!
When I was living in the UK.
Places.
Ooh, we've all got a passport, love.
When I was living in the UK, I used to live in the UK, just in case you
didn't. I didn't know that. Yeah, no. You should tell me about that sometime while I polish my awards.
The set list for that tour was, of course, packed with all of her early hits from The Fame and The Fame Monster, and the production value on it was sensational. That's the one that they filmed at Madison Square Gardens for the TV concert special as well.
It was huge. The set of that show alone was... I had never seen anything like that on scale, and to be honest, I don't know if I really have seen anything to that scale since. This was a moving castle that opened.
Yeah.
Did you say castle or castle?
Castle. Side note?
Depends where you're from.
Packing them.
Well, then you probably spell it wrong at the very least.
Part of the production of this tour included a costume piece that she wore, which was called the Living Dress. Now, the Living Dress dominates like the finale the Monster Ball tour. So the song that she does in it is So Happy I Could Die. As she sings, everyone's seen this dress. It's
hard to explain. It's almost
iridescent.
It's almost like an iridescent kind of lame looking thing, but it must be some kind of plastic
It has to be constructed out of plastic. So because as she's singing, the gown actually begins to move. It was a crystal covered headdress at the top, and that fanned out like a peacock's tail. And then the plastic and woven steel skirt opened up, and then wings unfolded from her back. So the dress was actually created by Vin Burnham, who is a London-based costume designer whose work includes the iconic rubber suit worn by Michael Keaton's Batman, and an animatronics expert who worked on Wes Anderson's version of Fantastic Mr. Fox. The original brief was for a firefly dress, and the early sketches were fairly literal with antenna and things like that, but Gaga wanted something that looked more like couture fashion than anything else.
It was almost going to be, a big bug-like, do you think, initially?
Yeah, I think that's what he'd sort of designed, and then she came back and was like, oh no, I want it more like couture fashion.
Wow.
It was later in the design process that Vin Burnham decided to add the animated features. The bustle and train concealed motors and cables, and then the wings were operated by Gaga with bungee cords, and the headdress and dress movements and all the face fans and things like that were all connected to motors, and they were remote controlled off stage.
I would love to know how long it took her to get into that dress.
Yeah.
Like, if that was the finale piece of this huge show, she had been dancing her absolute fanny off for about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, she was in the middle of Rod Laver Arena and she didn't even need to know it. She was out there busting her guts out and then had to stand backstage.
Yeah,
this would have taken 5 minutes, surely.
And, oh,
my gosh. It was incredible.
Yeah, and it really is a statement piece. And when you see it, we'll pop a video of it up on the website. When you see her in it, the whole piece is moving and it's breathing, and it just looks like a living, breathing organism that she's wearing. And it's so stunning.
It's almost, when you think about that dress, you can kind of understand more of the conceptual ideas behind art pop. Do you think that dress could have belonged in the art pop tour? Oh, we'll cut this right out then.
No, I don't think so. Art Pop for me is a nearly perfect album, and I have a lot of feelings surrounding it.
Did you see the tour of Art Pop then?
Yeah, I did. I loved it.
It was very outer space / under the sea, don't you think,
Which was the whole theme of the whole theme of what felt like that album.
Yeah, I feel like that dress could have fitted in, though.
Yeah, I'm sure she could have worked it in somewhere, but I'm very...
she's very protective of what Art Pop is, apparently.
This is actually the end of the podcast. Thank me, because I have to leave now. I have upset tequila.
I love a little bit of a diva spat, and I want to talk a little bit about the beef between her and Madonna.
Diva on our list that has an issue with Madonna.
It's a little bit on Madonna, though, this beef. I mean, Madonna kind of came out of the gate, and she started it with these comments.
What you think about Lady Gaga?
It feels reductive.
Is that good?
Look it up.
And that's a shit-eating grin, if ever you've seen.
I'd like to look up the word reductive, though. Could we actually get the definition for the word reductive?
Our fact-checker over there is busy typing away.
Reductive, tending to present a subject or problem in a simplified form, especially one viewed as crude.
I think she's kind of referring to here the fact that she thinks that Lady Gaga is just doing a version of what's been done before.
I think I can see the correlation between Lady Gaga and Madonna with people comparing the two. But I think about it when I look on paper, I look at Lady Gaga's mentality and thought processes behind her art that goes so much deeper for me. And that's probably my connection to her. I don't feel that same sense from Madonna. I feel like it's a bit more materialistic and just a pop-produced diva. Whereas I feel like Lady Gaga's standing up for your right and actually going along a life journey with her. But again, that could just be our age category. So
I also just think that there's not really anything wrong with referencing stuff that has happened before or taking an idea and building on it. I think that is kind of art. It is. You do learn from each other and build.
Yeah, like I don't think, look, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think this is the first podcast I've ever been on or heard. So nothing is original. We must build on what already exists to make it better.
Gay men talking about divas. Yeah. What a unique idea.
And that's exactly what I feel is she's just built on and made it better.
That's exactly it. You can say reductive all you want, but there aren't really any original ideas anymore.
No, everything good has been done.
Yes.
That's it. Now we just do different versions of good.
And if you can make that great, then great. And
yeah.
I think that's probably what Madonna's probably most jealous of is the success that she's having from it. And she thinks, oh, well, she's going to come and take my place. But when, in actual fact, Madonna's been done for years.
Mm.
And that's a very well-known fact.
This could be something that we touched on last week too, about there is a lot of the stalwarts of the divaship community that are very supportive of the up-and-coming divas, but there are some who find it threatening, who are gatekeepers and like, well, no, I'm not going to let you through. I'm not going to acknowledge you because that somehow threatens my role in the world.
Are you specifically talking about me and not booking Tequila at Baby Drag?
I was just about to say the exact same thing. I was going to say, Mr. Lynx is sitting right here and how dare you attack her like this?
I'm actually not like that at all. I want everybody to get up there and make an absolute dickhead of themselves.
So then
I have something to talk about because that's my job, is to talk about it.
One of my favourite things was the response that Lady Gaga had towards Madonna, which was filmed and aired in the 5'2" documentary. Can you tell I watched that documentary last night?
I was just about to say, was your research just primarily watching this one documentary?
Yes.
Because ours was following her career for 11 years. I feel really ripped off today.
No refunds.
Looking back at what they were saying and going, oh my God, no, I was totally like honoring. And so the thing with like me and Madonna, for example, is that I admired her always and I still admire her no matter what she might think of me. No, I do.
Yeah.
The only thing that really bothers me about her is that I'm Italian and from New York, you know? So, like, if I got a problem with somebody, I'm gonna fucking tell you to your face. But no matter how much respect I have for her as a performer, I could never wrap my head around the fact that she wouldn't look me in the eye and tell me that I was reductive or whatever.
So she's never, like, given you a call and been like,
No. Like, I saw it on fucking TV. Telling me that you think I'm a piece of shit through the media is like, it's like a guy passing me like a note through his friend. My buddy thinks you're hot. Here's his like, fuck you. Like, where's your buddy? Fucking throwing me up against the wall and kissing me.
Right.
Like, I just want Madonna to fucking push me up against the wall and kiss me and tell me I'm a piece of shit.
That is a kink I'd pay to watch.
I really love it. I mean, she's not taking any prisoners with the way that she's saying it. She actually says a little bit later, you can't use any of that footage, but obviously we're back on that.
Here we go. That's the premise for this podcast.
Also, 10 points for the use of I'm Italian and from New York.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
Between that and there could be 100 people in the room, it's two of her most overused phrases.
One of my favourite moments, just because it's a silly moment and it's somewhere I wouldn't expect her to turn up, it's RuPaul's Drag Race Season 9. We met all the queens, they all walked in, and then we met our 15th queen, which was Donnie from New York City, and in walked Lady Gaga. And you just remember Charlie Hyde's going, oh God, that's a really good Lady Gaga.
And all of the girls being like, that's the best Lady Gaga I've ever seen.
Literally, they're like, Derek Barry.
This is the Derek Barry of the season.
This is the Derek Barry of the season. I think that is actually the quote.
Yeah.
I watched that in the car as I did my research out the front. And then Eureka O'Hara. Was it Eureka O'Hara?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And then she just goes absolutely hysterical. Do you remember the moment?
You'll never know what you've done for me. I've been so close to death.
Yeah. Awful.
It's not like Eureka to find a reason for the camera to go on it.
I know. I feel like Eureka recognized her from, like, serving her a burger or something many years ago. Like, she was just obsessed with her.
I don't remember Gaga ever working in a burger joint.
From the telephone video film. From the telephone video film clip. We went through this.
She made that syrup.
It's that poison saying that my parents have generation to generation brought down. But that was just something so silly. As I said before about the Muppets, like, she's such a, you know, wanting to be out there pushing her message with her really big positive themes and, you know, groundbreaking stuff sometimes, in my opinion. But just to see her be really silly and have a little bit of fun with life, like, as she was on the Muppets and Drag Race. And it's just a bit of fun. It's just a bit of fun to see her like that.
It was the first of their really big, big, they do it often now with their premiere episodes, to have a big star. But she sort of kicked that off. They had to sort of top it each season. But
I don't think they ever topped it. Drag Race never topped having Lady Gaga on the show.
They never ever did, I would. I think honorable mention does have to go to Nicki Minaj for the opening of the very first episode of last season, season 12, because that was some.
She was the greatest judge.
She was the greatest judge to ever sit on that panel.
See, I think Miley Cyrus would, not Lady Gaga, but Miley Cyrus would beat Nicki Minaj for me.
Right. And again, Miley Cyrus, one of the ones that came into the
She was backstage with the boom mic, pretending that, she was a part of the cast, having a bit of fun.
Love it.
Whereas I think Nicki Minaj being on that panel was just to get her ratings up kind of thing. get in with the pink dollar, you know what I mean, sis?
That was the thing with Gaga, though. It did really feel like it was something she wanted to do as opposed to something that, you know, was a gig. They probably didn't pay her as much as she would normally get paid for something like that.
She was there to have a nice time. And I think that's really important when you get to a certain level of fame. When you've got to be able to, you know, pop down to the Peel and have a nice time once you finish a shift.
Nuggets of wisdom from Missy Levine.
Who said nuggets?
But also one of my favourite things from that episode as well is the first runway that they do is a Lady Gaga runway. They have to show something that represents their home state and then something that's like an iconic Lady Gaga moment. And she's giving all of these like asides and all of these tidbits on the judging panel about, oh, Comme des Garçons made this outfit because of this and all of these different little things and nuggets of information from behind the scenes of how all of these looks were constructed and why she wore this to the Met Gala and why she wore this to the VMAs or whatever.
Great television.
So stunning. Really great television.
I'm going to be honest, I didn't watch the full ep, but I appreciate you bringing those little nuggets of wisdom to us today.
Right.
Thank you so much.
For all of her performance and all of her like crazy costumes and all of that jazz that comes with it, the production that comes with it, for me it's always been the fact that her voice shines through. And never was this more prevalent than her appearance on the Oscars.
Sound of Music?
Sound of Music.
Yes. Yeah,
at the 2015 Academy Awards.
Yeah, yeah.
And she did a medley. We'll pop it up on the website. It is so incredible. She sings The Sound of Music, My Favorite Things, and then she caps it off with Climb Every Mountain. The vocal stamina that you need to have, not only to be able to sing full stop, but to be able to sing those three songs back to back up on the stage of one of the biggest live television award shows in front of the one and only Julie Andrews, who played the original Maria in the Sound of Music film.
How intimidating would that be? It's like the time Lexi did The Shine in front of Vanessa Morosi. Like, pinch yourself, stuff.
Yes, it's just like
it's
that.
It's so much like that, isn't it? Oh, my God.
Here's a little snippet from that performance. The one and only Julie Andrews comes out and gives her a hug at the end of that and presents the next awards. But honestly, so stunning to see her up there with that kind of vocal power and that kind of vocal ability when she was only really known for being a pop star. This was before the Cheek to Cheek album that she did with Tony Bennett, where she really let her jazz side out a bit more. She's a fully, almost like Broadway trained actress, singer, dancer in terms of what she does. She's a full triple threat. And she went to the NYU Tisch School of the Arts. That's where she got her start and that's where she got her training from. To see this, it really blows my mind.
I think it's one of the things that you often forget about Lady Gaga too, because of the pop roots and what people may think of pop stars, it's almost like, oh, that's right, she can actually sing. Like, she actually has quite a stellar voice. And if you ever hear her literally just singing, even from clips before she was famous that I was looking at today, her voice is just stunning. It always has been. She's obviously got a real natural gift for that.
I have always liked her much better. This is controversial, but I've always liked her much better either sitting behind a piano or standing behind that microphone and doing nothing but singing.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you.
I've seen her live a lot. I've seen her live in Vegas most recently, just before lockdown. Thank gosh I got over there in January to see her live in Las Vegas. Sure, it's a great show overall, but you notice that she does start to become extremely tired and extremely laggy and exhausted. And then the next night you go to see her piano and jazz show. She's sitting behind a piano in beautiful ball gowns and just standing there in the exact same theater the night before that she come flying down from the ceiling, dancing around the arena. Exactly.
So she does do like a strip back show.
Yeah, she does two shows. She has two residencies in Vegas. She does the pop one, and then the next night she'll do the stand and deliver one, and then she'll have a couple of days off.
And
and then repeat it. Yep.
Oh,
so
wow.
You go, I went, I brought the pop one, saw that one. That was brilliant. Comes flying down from the ceiling. It's a big, extravagant, epic Lady Gaga spectacular, like what you think.
What you're expecting.
Yeah, it's Lady Gaga Rock of Stedford, if you say so. Yeah. And then the next night, she just comes out in a beautiful ball gown and sings for 55 minutes.
Oh my God, love that.
It's just the light and shade and the balance of those two things together. And you look at her singing there with nothing but her band. That is what really, in my eyes, makes her the huge star that she is. I love all the wacky dancing and I love all the silliness and the craziness, but her voice is definitely so strong and does push through.
I definitely think so. And I think that's why, for me, I think she's the single greatest female performer that I'll see in my generation, because she encompasses all of that. She encompasses the singing, the dancing, and the acting. She is a quadruple threat. She produces everything.
Plus, then there's that performance art element still.
She has a hand in everything that she does, much like Barbara Streisand, even.
Yeah.
Harking further back to divas that we've done before, having that production element where she is in charge of every last thing that she does.
Yeah, there's a really interesting clip from behind the scenes of the rehearsals of the Super Bowl and stuff, where she behaves in a way that really reminds me of that clip that we played from the Barbara Streisand episode, where she knows exactly what she wants. And you can see this perfectionist side of her, and you can see that she is refusing to let anyone compromise that in any way. And it was the thing where the narrator, when we played the Barbara clip, said, is she being a diva or is she being a perfectionist that reasonably refuses to take shortcuts? And that's how I feel Lady Gaga is. And she might come across a little bit of a diva.
That's a really good thing to consider, isn't it? That concept of having everything perfect, is that making her, the word diva is usually such a negative term, oh, what a diva. Like, is that making her a diva because she wants everything to be perfect, or does that mean she wants to be a perfect artist?
Yeah.
And it's a great conversation that we've had now quite a few times on this podcast about that, about whether a diva is something that is a negative thing. A lot of female artists, when they get called a diva, they see that in a negative light, but we're celebrating that with these women. We're saying the diva within them is to be celebrated.
Which is exactly similar to the drag community, is when we'll come out and go, give it up for the diva that is, and that's like a congratulatory thing. That's something that we go, oh cool, she's a diva, yeah, like rock on, that's what this podcast is celebrating.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're right, it can be taken in such a negative connotation.
Which we've talked about before, is not the first time that our community has repurposed a word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we repurpose the word queer, we've repurposed the word diva. I think that
poof, Ottoman, we call them Ottomans now, but we've reclaimed that one.
There is this moment too where Lady Gaga says, if I press the wrong note on the guitar, it's her that has messed that up. And she says if I mess that up because of something else that's gone wrong, it doesn't matter. Everybody goes, Lady Gaga messed it up. Like, these people are still representing themselves when they're performing, and everybody else around them has to, I guess, be respectful of that as well.
Just side note on the guitar. With her Vegas show, she actually comes flying in with the guitar playing as she's swinging above everyone's head.
Which is similar to, we should talk for a minute about the Super Bowl performance, you know, where appeared to jump off the roof of the Super Bowl.
She jumped. She absolutely jumped. To the roof!
I mean, it was she to did. The roof!
She was certainly lowered from very high up.
The thing is, they pre-recorded the jump from the roof.
Yes.
And then when...
They pulled her up before, yeah.
Yeah,
before
and the then when it went live, what she actually did is jump from the stands a little further down.
Which is still pretty bloody iconic.
Which is still, it's so impressive.
And she performed on that tightrope for quite a few minutes of that performance until they took her out. It was fascinating stuff.
Did she play the guitar on the way down then?
No, but she does play it later on.
She does, up on top of the stand.
Not when she's on the wire.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the fun facts and figures that we have discovered during our research of one Miss Lady Gaga. Did you
know? Thank you, Tamar Braxton.
Oh, we know now that's Tamar, yes. You know that was Tamar Braxton?
Tamara Braxton.
Tamara?
No, it's Tamar.
Is it? Is she a philanthropist?
Did you think her name was Tamara? That's cute.
I didn't care. Yeah.
Well, some people did, and we've had a lot of pointed messages.
What were you calling her?
We thought it was Tony Braxton.
Tony Braxton. Isn't that the girl who sings, oh, Mickey, you're so... No, it's Tony Basil.
Thanks for coming. Well, it's the Braxton sisters, and we just assumed it was Tony.
We took a punt in the dark and said, oh, yeah, that's Tony Braxton.
You've got to be careful taking a punt in the dark. It could end up with a couple of cards stamped down at the super clinic.
Mary, did you know that during lockdown this year, Lady Gaga actually delayed the release of her, what I'm calling a cultural reset of an album, Chromatica, to produce a live stream concert. It was called One World Together at Home, and Lady Gaga featured a lineup of performances in tribute to the many healthcare workers battling COVID-19. She partnered with the World Health Organization and a charity called Global Citizen. She also performed during the live stream event a piano cover of the song Smile, which was so beautiful, and we'll pop that up on the website as well. It benefited the World Health Organization's COVID-19 Solidarity Response Fund, and it was hosted in the US by Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, and Stephen Colbert. And it featured so many different celebrities and different artists.
Massive names.
On massive perform. Names. Yeah, there was like Taylor Swift, Ellen DeGeneres.
Vanessa Amorosi. The big three.
Jennifer Lopez, Celine Dion, Camila Cabello. Matthew McConaughey came on and gave a speech at one point. John Legend, Elton John, Liam Payne, Paul McCartney, Alicia Keys, just to name a few.
Tony Basil. Mickey, you're so fun.
The live stream actually went on. There was a pre-show that lasted for about 6 hours, and then the live stream came on after that. On April 19, it was reported that the special raised nearly $128 million for coronavirus healthcare workers, which puts it on par with the other legendary fundraiser, Live Aid, as the highest grossing charity concert in history. The Guinness World Records announced on May 22nd that the global broadcast special set the records for the most musical acts to perform on at a remote music festival, and the most money raised for charity by a remote musical festival.
She has done a lot of charity work throughout her career, hasn't she?
She really has.
So much.
I did a bit of charity work as well in the earlier days. I actually sold caramello koalas for the school, Cambria College.
Sell or eat?
Well, a bit of both. We needed a new shade sale over the sandpit. And we all had to take home our caramello koalas to try and sell those. But my mum, you know, Weight Watchers, not her friend, ate the whole box. So, you know, turn, we did have to purchase the whole box. But have you done any charitable things?
No.
You took me to Revs that time.
I did. Yeah, no, that sounds like you're right on par with that.
Yeah, practically, yeah, you know, same thing. Do you know she studied with the same vocal coach as Christina Aguilera?
Oh, wow.
And fun fact
on... I'm finished.
I really cut Missy off the Ruskies for a little while.
And a fun fact on that is that she still has the same vocal coach.
Since she was 11 years old.
Since she was 11 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. It was your fact.
I'm just trying to be engaged, girl.
Did you know that Gaga nearly stole the Tiffany diamond that she wore to the Oscars last year?
No, I did not know this.
I nearly stole my handbag that I took to Melbourne Drag Awards from Colette.
Look at all these similarities. This is exactly why we had you on this episode.
I am just so normal. I'm
Melbourne's
just...
Lady Gaga.
Just one of the people.
Her diamond necklace that she wore to the 2019 Oscars was an actual original Tiffany's piece, and the diamond that was used in it was also used in the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's, and it was worth more than $40 million.
Whoa,
so, $40
million? Yeah. So it features the Tiffany diamonds, and it was a 128.54 carat yellow gemstone that was discovered in 1877.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like it's a legacy piece. She's
just accidentally booted off home with it.
Well, so the current...
Imagine being so rich you forgot you had $40 million around your neck.
So the current setting of the necklace includes a total of 481 diamonds. Now, if you look at it, you can look it up. It's beautiful. It's such a stunning necklace. But as you can imagine, the security for this piece of jewelry was out of control. She had four security guards flanking her at the awards, following her everywhere she went.
I've been flanked by four security guards before. It was at the Peel, but...
And then appearing on Graham Norton earlier this year during lockdown, she explained, "I didn't know what was going to happen that night. I was just so happy to be there. My sister and I were barreling through champagne backstage. And then when we left, I didn't tell anyone. And I still had the diamond on. Everyone freaked out and I was still wearing it. And then I went to Madonna's house and security guards were side-eyeing me. And eventually when I was heading to Taco Bell, my car was pulled over and Tiffany's security politely removed it from my neck."
I'm so glad it was polite. Because if she calls to see an in Taco Bell, you'd be devastated, wouldn't you? You can't be banned from Taco Bell and Tiffany's.
I love that Taco Bell was the line for them, though. They're like, "We'll put up with a lot of things, but you are not taking that thing into a Taco Bell."
It cannot be seen in Taco Bell.
You can wear it to your enemy Madonna's house. Instead of going to the after party, she went straight to Madonna's house and went to party there. And they apparently were all there just watching her.
I also love this dynamic here where all the security guards are going, "She doesn't realise. Who's going to tell her? You tell her. No, you tell her. I don't want to tell her. Somebody's going to tell her eventually." Eventually, we're going to have to tell her.
$40 million worth of diamonds around her neck, and we need it back.
They just followed her around for the night, too scared to tell her that they wanted their necklace back, and then eventually went, sorry, Miss Gaga.
Just imagine being that level of like, I'm such a normal human being. I'm just one of the people.
Yeah.
I may be wearing $40 million worth of diamonds, but I'm just one of the people, and I wouldn't steal it. It just happens that I really want a Taco Bell. I just forgot I was drunk.
I hadn't finished my Vodi Coke at D&M Bar and Nightclub one day, and I thought I'll just pop it in my handbag and leave. I got caught too. The security
that was when
guard
you were
chasing
flunked by four
See?
Security guards.
Tiffany was chasing me. Well, not Tiffany and Co. Just a lady called Tiffany. And you shouldn't ever have fucked with Tiffany. She was rough. But you know, she chased me down Commercial Road trying to get that pint glass back.
See? It happens to celebrities all the time.
Everywhere we go.
I found it very interesting to learn that Lady Gaga is the godmother of both of Elton John's two boys. So Zachary and Elijah, they're both godsons of Lady Gaga, which is actually quite serious. I think Elton John and Lady Gaga have this really beautiful, genuine friendship that's been building over a few years. Here's what he had to say on Saturday Night Live back when he announced that Lady Gaga was Zachary's, his first child's godmother.
For those of you still concerned that we're unusual parents, do not worry. It's not like we're the only two people involved in the child's life. His godmother is Lady Gaga. That's true. That is not a joke. Lady Gaga is his actual godmother, which is ironic because I've always said Mars ain't the kind of place to raise your kids. And Gaga loves Mars. She says Mars had good schools and great discos.
Yeah, so quite genuinely, and they've talked at length in many interviews about the fact that they have announced Lady Gaga as their godmother and that she's quite hands-on as a godmother too and often checks in with a kid. Elton John and Lady Gaga have had this really genuine friendship going on for a really long time, ever since January 2010 when they performed at the Grammys together. They've worked together multiple times since, and then, of course, back in 2008, Lady Gaga covered Your Song and then performed it at the Grammys later that year. And then, of course, most recently, Elton John featured on Time From Above on the Chromatica album.
That was a great reconnection because I remember very fondly those two sitting down at the piano. Was it the Grammys or the VMAs?
I think it was the Grammys.
Oh, wasn't it so good when they come together to sing?
Was this one? Speechless.
At the Grammys in 2010.
You left me speechless, so speechless.
And Lady Gaga talks about Elton John as her mentor. So I think they have a really genuine relationship.
Genuine, really, really beautiful friendship.
I have one more handy fact for us all. Edge of Glory, which actually is one of my favourite Lady Gaga songs, very underrated, but it is one of my absolute favourites, was written about her granddad. Isn't that nice?
That is cute.
She said to the Huffington Post, she was like, my grandfather was on his last leg of life and she was sitting down with her dad and they knew that he was going to go and her dad was just so sad. And they drank a bottle of tequila and they were reminiscing all these good times about her granddad. And then she said, I started playing and I said to my dad, I said, don't be sad. He's on the edge of the most glorious moment in life when you realize that you won. Look how much he won at life. He won at love with grandma and he's on the edge of a glorious moment.
See, that would have been great if you had brought that.
Oh my God, how lovely. Thank you for reading out that note I just handed you tequila. I tried a few times. I couldn't quite get it out. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm so obsessed with this because I know it's not why we're so obsessed with you, but I'm obsessed with this fact because when she was in her early college years at the NYU's Tisch School of the Arts, she was regularly performing at local bars and she had a loyal crew of what we now know as haters. And as was the time back then, Facebook was very prevalent and they had a niche Facebook group dedicated to her never being famous. And the group was actually called Stephanie Germanotta Will Never Be Famous.
Yeah.
One very small group was dedicated to talking absolute shit about Gaga, who was then at the time still known as Stephanie Germanotta. And they posted about how she was an attention whore. She would never make it big. Her nose was too big. She was too ugly. She was never what the music industry would want to see. Her voice wasn't good enough.
All things that have been said about you in the past, so you're probably going to make it.
There's a very good chance.
Hey. This information is supposed to all be factual.
But also, imagine coming out of that and your fame being born just after that fact, and then going on to be the first woman in history to win an Oscar, Grammy, BAFTA, and a Golden Globe all in the same year.
Well, lots of beauty is born from hatred, let's be honest. The world is a hateful place, and many beautiful things can flourish.
All right, gang, let's steer this ship towards why it is that we as a queer community are so obsessed with Lady Gaga.
And I was like, why are you so obsessed
with me? Well, to start with, Lady Gaga herself identifies as a bisexual, so she's really part of the umbrella of our community. But also, she attributes a lot of her success and the turning point of her really being successful to the gay community. Very early on, she was supported by LGBTIQ marketing company Fly Life, and one of her first television appearances was on the new Now Next Awards in 2008, which is obviously a very prolific LGBTIQ awards program. And when she went on to win the MTV Video Music Award for International Video of the Year for Poker Face, her acceptance speech was very short. She just thanked God and the gays.
We love that. We love an icon that can just come out and be like, I don't really need to thank everyone on my team. I just want to thank God and the gays.
Well, that's all that matters in life, isn't it? The God and the gays.
The two most important things.
The two primary categories of life. But she always has resonated with the queer community so much. And I think it's because her message has always been about tolerance. So tolerance for yourself and who you are and flourishing and being the person that you really want to be. So it's not just about like selling records and getting out there and having a little party with everyone. It's about really spreading that message of love and equality throughout, which she's always done.
She really has always done. And she's always been the kind of person to put her money where her mouth is as well.
Yeah.
Back in 2009, in a galaxy far, far away from today, when same-sex unions still weren't legal in the US and LGBTQIA plus Americans couldn't serve openly in the military, she was 23 years old. And at the time, she went to Washington, D.C. to participate in the National Equality March. It was a rally held on the West Lawn of the US Capitol building, and she was angry. She was mad. Yeah. It was the very beginning of her career. And she screamed, "Are you listening?" And she was demanding action from President Barack Obama. And she said, "We will continue to push your administration to bring your promise to reality." And then in that same weekend, she attended the Human Rights Campaign Gala and took a stand when she took the stage. And she said, "I'm not going to play one of my songs tonight because tonight is not about me. It's about you." And then she sang the John Lennon classic song, Imagine, acknowledging the music industry's tremendous amount of accommodation of homophobia.
I found that too in my research. I read about that a little bit too, and I kind of get goosebumps because I mean of the way that she says it, and it is really that, you know, putting your money where your mouth is type of thing. And we talk about a lot of divas, and you know, a lot of divas are very supportive of the community. Some that we haven't covered on this podcast maybe use it as a little bit of a marketing chip, or they might use it as a bit of good PR.
It's definitely prevalent, isn't it, in the current day pop diva
category.
I mean, is that there's a lot of people
they want to claim the gays,
putting their support behind us for a small period of time,
yeah,
just to potentially influence their record sales or their current agenda. She's been consistent.
Totally.
It's always been there.
Through doing the research of this podcast, you can feel the difference because the stories are through everything that she does as opposed to isolated little events. You know, I mean, she released Born This Way. Born This Way is, I mean, Elton John, her good friend Elton John, said that it was the new I Will Survive. It's the new sort of gay pride anthem. And I sort of forgot about the lyrics of that song. Is so strong, and it's so about acceptance.
That's just not about the queer community. That song is about everyone. Single minority exclusive. Yeah.
No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, no matter black, white or gay, chola or orient made.
Well.
Whether you're broke or evergreen, you're black, white, based, chola descent, you're Lebanese, you're orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast, bullied or teased, rejoice and love yourself today, cause baby, you were born this way.
No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive.
And that was an entire anthem, and that was an anthem that was mainstream radio. It was lyrics that everybody knew, so it ingrains it into people's heads.
Definitely, you know? Yeah.
There was somewhere recently, and I can't remember, Robbie, was it us talking about it on this pod that, or I've written it somewhere, I've spoken about it to someone somewhere recently, that the very first time that the word transgender was ever used on a National Super Bowl broadcast was when she sang that at
Super
Bowl halftime show.
You really? Were saying that to me. I don't know was if it was on the pod, but we definitely were talking about it. Yeah.
That is a fun fact.
About it. Yeah, it was the first time that the word transgender had ever been used during the national broadcast of the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh.
And that was 51 Super Bowls in as well.
Yeah.
That's crazy. crazy to me. And for her to be pushing that agenda constantly as like a lived experience and as something that she is genuinely passionate about and genuinely cares about, that means so much to like our community.
Very, very authentic.
Do you think that might be one of her most played songs?
I think so.
It's got to be, hasn't it? That would be played at every rally, every pride, every gay bar. Like,
I did it
just
in Wagga.
Well, it's been done everywhere. I've been everywhere, man. It's been done everywhere. Mm. It's just one of those songs that will continue on. Look, we've referenced Madonna a few times in this podcast, but it's the vogue that we will always have of our generation.
Well, that's it'll what just Elsa be something was saying, you know? It's the I Will Survive of today. One of the things that she did for the community that I found the most moving is when it was in 2010. We're talking about the work that she did for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. She attended the MTV Video Music Awards accompanied by four gay and lesbian former members of the US Army who had been discharged over the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Like, rocking up at an award ceremony with these two couples in tow. She later, of course, this was the award ceremony where she wore the meat dress, and she later talked about that with Ellen, saying that if we don't stand up for what we believe in and if we don't fight for our rights, pretty soon we're going to have as much rights as the meat on our own bones.
And the fight for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell became such a constant in her career that she constantly was urging senators to act. She headlined rallies, she made videos that went viral, and until it finally became a reality in 2011. And then when Donald Trump decided to implement his own trans military ban in 2017, she was very quick to react, saying, "The message you have just sent has endangered the lives of people all over the United States and overseas bravely serving our nation," which she sent out to him and added him in a tweet. Over the 2016 holidays, Gaga paid a surprise visit to the LGBTQIA plus homeless youth at New York's Ali Forney Center. On Twitter, she said, "I spent a beautiful moment with LGBTQ youth at the Ali Forney Center, the largest drop-in center in the world. She brought presence and led them in a group meditation." And it wasn't the first time that she'd used her voice and star power to bring attention to this cause. During the Monster Ball tour, she paired up with Virgin Mobile to recruit volunteers to help. She said, "More than 2 million young people will experience some form of homelessness this year. One in every five homeless youth in the community identify themselves as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. This makes me very angry. Now it's time for us to fight back. Thanks to my partnership with Virgin Mobile and the Regeneration Campaign, hundreds of my fans have donated their time to working at homeless youth shelters over the course of this year's tour and have all gotten free tickets to see the show, but we still need to do more."
Mm.
And there is beautiful photos. She pulls up and she's driving this car, this big SUV. She pulls up and she opens the boot and it's just filled with presents. And this was 2016. Like, and
what did we get? iPad is like Oprah. Everyone gets this. Everyone gets that.
I don't even know, because they took all of the presents inside, but you can see her and she's there. It was around the time of the release of the Joanne album. So she was in her little denim shorts and she was really like country rocker chick, but she was so just looked really down to earth. And she spent the whole day over the Christmas period at the Ali Forney Center in New York City. Talk about putting your money where your mouth is. Like, it's so great to see.
Well, she's got that $40 million necklace she nicked off Tiffany.
Plenty of money.
She's flogged that.
It's interesting when you're mentioning that she did that in partnership with Virgin Mobile. It reminded me of the fact that at one point she was in partnership with Target, but one of the things was that she had said that Target needed to be more supportive of the gay community and that they didn't meet the thresholds that she had suggested, and she ended up terminating the partnership with Target based off that.
Yeah, and that was around the time of the Fame Monster double release, special release edition album.
The remix,
In 2000, around about 2009. So really an ally from the start of her career. I mean, probably an ally for her entire life, but an ally really from the get. I just wanted to give a special mention to the Born This Way Foundation, which was co-founded and led by Lady Gaga and her mother, Cynthia Germanotta, which they founded in 2011, which supports the mental health of young people and works with them to create a kinder and braver world. Through high-impact programming, youth-led conversations, and strategic cross-sectoral partnerships, they aim to make kindness cool.
Aww.
That's a bit sweet, isn't it?
It's the dorkiest catchphrase I've ever heard.
It's so make sweet. Kindness
and
cool.
It's just like, it's about like validating the emotions of like young people and eliminating the stigma surrounding mental health as well.
She's been such an advocate for mental health. I think, you know, growing up, I've been with her for 10 years and she's always talked about it, which makes it feel like it's okay for me to talk about when I get up there publicly in front of people and make a mention of it. It's like she's equipping us to be better us, which is quite magical. So that's a great thing that she's got a foundation for that.
Using the power and the privilege that you have in that position correctly. You know what I mean? Like, because you do have the power to make other people feel more comfortable about the same things that you've gone through. So
100%. You can visit their website at bornthisway.foundation to find out more about what their organization is all about and how they're helping improve the mental health and eradicating the stigma surrounding teenage mental health as well.
I want to tell you guys about my favorite Lady Gaga moment, which applies quite nicely to why we're so obsessed with you and just how easily the support of the community rolls off her tongue. Cast your minds back to 2010 when it was apparently still appropriate for media to question people about their genitals.
Oh, the good old days.
Why anyone thought that was a fucking good idea, I'll never know.
There was this real learning curve where the media, and I think people as a whole, had to learn that it really wasn't appropriate to be questioning people about their genitals. I think Laverne Cox really paved the way and said, look, I'm not going to talk to you about that because that's not what we are about as a community. That's not what's important about our message or who we are as people. It's not important about anybody.
It's none of your fucking business either.
She's also really not got the best surname to be bringing that topic up.
It all came to a head for Lady Gaga back in 2010 because I think it was based off one photo, wasn't it? Where she sort of was swinging her leg up on a motorbike and some people felt like they could see some bulge or that, you know, whatever. So it became this international conversation about does Lady Gaga have a penis? Anderson Cooper, of all people, should know better, but yeah. He asked her about it on 60 Minutes and here's what she had to say.
There was that rumor where that you had a male appendage, that you were a hermaphrodite and you joked about it on the stage last night.
Maybe I do.
but it's interesting.
Would it be so terrible?
But it's interesting. A lot of artists would immediately put out some sort of a statement saying this is absolutely not true. You have fun with it.
Why the hell am I going to waste my time and give a press release about whether or not I have a penis? My fans don't care and neither do I.
That is just absolutely amazing, isn't it?
Isn't it great?
And I can't imagine anybody else saying it, though. Like, it's so intrinsically like her to just be like, what? And what are you talking about?
Why are you talking about
We're watching the video and she's chewing something. Yeah. Her body language is really like, WTF.
Yeah.
Like,
that's for me the cavalier way in which she says it. Where she's just like, she's got something in her mouth and she's like, no, next question. Like move on.
Why would I release a press release about my appendage? Like, it's just, it's so genius.
So great.
And I think, and I don't want to speak on behalf of anybody, but I feel like if those are the sort of questions that you were used to hearing, what an empowering thing to hear someone just call someone out and go, this is stupid. So like, why are we talking about this?
It doesn't matter. She didn't feel in that moment that she had to correct what the press were saying about her or clarify or justify any of it.
Many people would have. Many people would. Absolutely, that's not true.
I don't have that. I don't, yeah.
And she went, would it be so bad?
Would it be so bad? Who cares? Does it matter?
And so early, again, we talk about it. She's out the gate from the very early days of her career. This was, what year was this?
It was 10 years ago.
2010. I honestly think that it did change the direction of the conversation. It was part of what was happening, you know, Laverne Cox and Carmen Carrera and those sort of people helped as well. But it sort of changed the direction of what was appropriate conversation around transgender people.
If I've said it before, I'll say it again. Cultural reset.
Go on, say it again.
Cultural reset.
That brings us to the point of the episode where we take one diva moment, one qualifying moment that if nothing else makes our diva a diva, then this moment certainly does. So Lady Gaga has very strong opinions on lip syncing. Here's a little sample of what she has to say on the matter.
I know you sing live, right?
Yes. I love how there's a question about that, because you sing
not
live.
Not everybody does, and I don't judge that. No, I don't judge that because there's so much dancing and there's so much running around, and that stage is insane.
Yeah, but you should judge that. You should.
Because all artists are different, I think.
No, I don't think it's cool to lip sync.
Really?
No.
Ever.
But I think if you pay money for a ticket to see a show, that the artist should have some pipes.
Just in case any of you are wondering if I lip sync at all during my performances.
Which is incredibly ironic because she now has started singing over her own voice.
Yeah.
So she may not be lip syncing over a track, aka Britney style.
I feel like she's always done that, though. I feel like at the Monster Ball she was...
I feel like most artists do, unless, like, there's a lot of stuff when she's playing live on the piano. I don't know if she has, like, a pre-recorded track behind her as well that she's singing along to.
There is a clip where she collapsed during performing really early on in her career, and there was some talk about
the backing vocals. The backing vocals were still going underneath, but not her actual track vocals.
And that's when we all kind of learned that that's not lip syncing.
That's not lip syncing. Is the Britney coming out and singing over her own voice
for the entire
to make it look like she is singing.
Yeah.
But you'll notice a lot in the Lady Gaga Vegas show, there's a lot of track music, and she does spend a considerable amount of time dancing over singing, opposed to what she used to.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think with her health and a residency rather than... Well, and with her health issues and things like that, you can hear it. She physically struggles to keep up with some of those dancier numbers.
There wouldn't have been any of that in the more pared back show that you saw, though, would there?
No, that was just straight out voice with her beautiful backup singer. You know, she's got the pipes. There's no doubt about it. And if you're going to put on a hell of a show and you're going to be bloody entertaining, then to be honest, if your voice ain't quite there all the time, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, we're
having an immersive experience. We're not.
I'm certainly not judging, because I saw Britney Spears in Vegas and I saw Britney Spears here completely lip sync the whole way through, and I loved it because it was the campest, funnest. Like, if you know
you pay
what,
for
you're
what you're getting, you know what you're going to get.
Her Vegas residency was one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
It was so much fun.
I'd be annoyed if I turned up and Britney wasn't lip syncing.
Yeah,
like
oh god, imagine hearing that scene live.
Oh god.
They went a bit over the top in the Vegas residency, though. Like, it was just, the lip sync was so obvious because of how much heavy breathing they put into the lip sync. Yeah. Like, they're really still trying to convince you. But for me, that's what you know. It's written there right on the tin.
Yeah.
That is just about all we have time for another episode of Divas on Divas. I want to say a massive thank you to Missy Lemminx. Thank you so much for coming along and sharing your obvious passion for Lady Gaga.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun. A couple of hours out here in the sun in beautiful Collingwood. I thank you for having me.
I honestly can't remember a time where I've laughed as much as I have today. It's been an absolute hoot. So thank you for being our wonderful special guest.
And just remember, nobody will laugh more than me than when I thought I had recorded the podcast in 3 minutes. Joke's on me, it's now taken 3 hours. No, thank you so much for having me. It's fabulous what you do. You know what I say, the world needs another podcast. So stick at it, ladies.
Missy, if people want to follow you, where can they do that?
Generally walking from Circuit at 3 o'clock toward Peel Street every Friday and Saturday night. Alternatively, on Instagram at Missy Lemminx, Facebook, and look out for the Size Queens coming to practically everywhere near you.
Yes, cannot wait to start seeing it. Some amazing live drag again. Of course, you can follow us on our socials.
We're on Facebook at Divas on Divas Podcast and on Instagram at Divas on Divas.
Give us a like, give us a share. If you know someone that might like our show, tell them, because that's the only way we get the word out there.
Well, that and 5-star ratings as well. If you're on Apple Podcasts, we'd love to hear from you.
And even if you've got a friend in life that you really want to get rid of, just get them to listen to it. That'll help.
Of course, check out divasondivas.com, where we'll be popping up a lot of the clips that we've talked about today. Special thanks this week for all the research help from Wikipedia, Netflix, Twitter, Metro.co, Indie 100, Billboard, and the Born This Way Foundation. We're going to wrap up the show like we do every week with a moment from the Diva Vault. I'm a big fan of what you've picked this week, Tequila.
This one is a little bit of a deep reference for Lady Gaga. So it's a really great performance that she did on Good Morning America in 2013 as she was promoing her brand new album at the time, which is still to this day one of my favorite albums of all time, Art Pop. And she gave us a little bit of a Wizard of Oz fantasy, and it was promoting her lead single from the album, Applause. And she referenced a little bit of Judy Garland and a little bit of Over the Rainbow, and it's really just some fabulous stuff.
It's actually fantastic, and there's a bunch of costume changes in a really short amount of time. The Tin Man's there, the Lion's there, the Scarecrow's there. Like, it's very conceptual and it's very good. We'll pop it on the website. You have to have a look. And we're going to take you out with a little bit of that this week. Until next time, everybody, don't forget,
baby, you were born this way. We're not supposed to sing. Thank you.
we make our way to Oz?
Let's go!
I stand here waiting for you to bang the gong. To crash the critics saying, is it right or is it wrong?
Because the Fame Monster was, there was the normal album, then there was the then monster was the version added on to it. Yeah.
See, the Dulux. Fame Ball
Duet.
Dulux.
What, paint colours? I'm more of a wattle guy.
You let her go long enough, she'll just wattle on and on.
With all this IBS coming on, I might be wattling off to the loo.